This episode is brought to you by Shopify. Whether you're selling a little or a lot, Shopify helps you do your thing, however you cha-ching. From the launch your online shop stage, all the way to the we just hit a million orders stage. No matter what stage you're in, Shopify's there to help you grow. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/special offer, all lowercase. That's shopify.com/special offer.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
Before there was IMDb.com, there was Zach and Dustin.
You know those guys who think they know everything about a movie without having to go on the internet to look it up? That's us, but maybe only for the years 1981 through mid-1989.
No, I'd say late 1978 through early 1992. Either way, we know movies. And even more specifically, we know soundtracks from those movies.
Yeah, this is $2 Late Fee with Zach and Dustin.
This is the podcast where we pick a movie and soundtrack from our youth that we loved and see if it still holds up today.
All in the spirit of positivity and togetherness. Thanks for listening. On to the show.
Hey, everybody. Welcome to another episode of $2 Late Fee. This is a very special one to us. Well, they're all special, but this one is particularly special because it's our first interview that we've done with a film composer. We have the legendary, the one and only, Vince DiCola from Rocky IV, Staying Alive, and Transformers on our show today. Saying that he was great is an understatement. We were so lucky to have him on our show. I know, Dustin, you feel the same way, don't you?
I do feel the same way, Zach. In fact, this interview, I would say, is one of our finest ones yet. And I know that's a little, like, generic. Let me even say this may be our finest one yet.
Yeah.
It's certainly our best one with a composer. I'll tell you that much. Vince was so generous with his time. He talked about all the stories behind some of his amazing, amazing music. And I thought it was really cool and insightful. And we really got into the humanity of what it means to be a film composer during that time.
And also a journey. You go down this road in life thinking you're going to go one way, and you'd make a sharp left turn, and the next thing you know, you're working with Sylvester Stallone. And not only that, his stories that he tells on this episode will really just make you smile and make you go, wow, that was really cool.
I think I had a certain expectation maybe of what we would talk about, and then it just went in a completely different direction. I think we should say, too, that as we are recording this, we are in the middle of a global pandemic. So I think we're both grateful. I'm certainly grateful to be here recording. This is our first recording since, chaos. But I do think that there's a certain amount of rust and just heaviness that I've been feeling these past few weeks. So it really is nice to sit here with you and also, introduce this great interview, which I think will lighten a lot of the heaviness for a lot of people.
We need more of Vince in our life, and you're going to get it for the next 90 minutes. Enjoy this trip down memory lane with Vince, and forget about the chaos that's going on right now for a little while. And by the end of it, you'll smile, you'll be tapping your toes, and you'll be saying, hey, I think I want to go watch a movie.
Hey, I think I want to go watch a movie. Am I right, Rat? I think, too, also, we in our last episode, we really kind of delved into the Rocky IV soundtrack, which is arguably one of the best movie soundtracks of all time. Certainly that are collectively our favorite sports movie soundtrack.
Without a doubt.
And one that people generally know. So it's really incredible to chat with the man behind the music.
So without further ado, enjoy our interview with Vince DiCola.
Enjoy.
Vince DiCola, thank you for being on $2 Late Fee.
Thank you.
We are so honored to have you on our show. When we were in the promotion of this episode, we were saying the legendary film composer. And I said to Dustin, I said, he really is legendary. You are legendary, personally speaking. But I think in just in the broad sense, people, your music resonates so much with people.
Yeah. You know, legendary, that's a word that's kind of uncomfortable for me because I haven't done that many films.
Way to go, Zach. You've already made him uncomfortable.
No, I had nothing to do with that conversation.
I said, he's not legendary. That's going to make him uncomfortable. He's like, no, let's push it. He's going to love it. It's going to be great. We're going to start off the interview wonderfully. You're already uncomfortable.
No. You know, I did these films. I did these films so long ago. And honestly, I'm amazed that the music has had this kind of longevity.
Yeah.
I've been very blessed in that Rocky IV and Transformers, and staying alive to a certain point. The music still holds up after all these years. So yeah.
I told Dustin, great. I said,
this is after he said legendary.
I said, I want to talk about staying alive. And he goes, really, staying alive? And I go, no, I want to talk about the music of staying alive.
There you go.
He's very kind, because I was like, I refuse to talk about staying alive.
I don't blame you.
Obviously, we love your music. And I want to point out that you are our first composer guest.
Oh, great. Thank you.
That we've had on this show. So wow. We're very excited. Welcome.
Thank you.
And we, you know, our show covers, obviously, the movies, but we do cover the music. So it's great to get a composer's perspective
on the music
that we love.
Yeah, we are so connected not only to certain movies of the 80s, but the music as well.
Right.
And I feel like that's kind of how we bonded over our love of movies and music soundtracks. And the idea that when there's this perfect marriage of a great soundtrack and, for us, a great movie, there's nothing that can replace that.
Absolutely.
Right? So you're from Pennsylvania?
I am, yeah. Lancaster, Pennsylvania.
When did you move out to L.A. and get started with this crazy business?
1981. I actually got married May 23rd of 1981, and a week later we drove across the country with all our belongings.
Oh,
and
my gosh.
For me to pursue a career in music out here, because I had gone pretty much as far as I could go back in Lancaster. And I chose L.A. Yeah. because this is where a lot of the music that I was listening to and influenced by was being created. And I did not move out here to be a film composer or any kind of composer. I moved out here to be a session musician.
Okay. So when you say as far as you can go in Lancaster, what does that look like?
You know, there's not much happening.
You're doing weddings?
Yeah, there you go. Yeah. Weddings and funerals. And that's always fun, you know.
Right.
No, there were recording studios in there, but it wasn't like it is out here. You know, very few places in the United States have this kind of availability of talent and studios. So,
and in 1981, there was not it was a lot more limited than it is now, accessibility-wise.
Absolutely.
Nowadays, you can record from your home in Iowa, you know, and with a guy who's living in New Jersey, and next thing you know, you're putting together an album.
Yep.
But back in 1981, you come out here with your wife. Take us down that journey. Like, so you get out here in 81. What happened next?
So luckily I had a friend that was living out here, and he had set up a room in a house for us and a place in a top 40 band for me to play keyboards. I did that for about a year and a half, and my wife worked downtown in LA, so she was taking the bus down, and that was crazy. That was a whole new culture shock thing for her. In fact, the whole LA scene coming from a small town was a big shock.
Can only imagine.
But the nice thing is, within a year of moving here, I made my first major connection, and I was playing at a nightclub in Woodland Hills called the Red Onion, and it was a chain of Mexican restaurants, and they had live music. And I was playing one night, it was kind of an off night, and I saw this gentleman walk in. He looked kind of familiar. He sat down, just by himself, and I noticed that he was paying attention to me, to the keyboards. And at the break, he came up and he introduced himself to me as Frank Stallone. And I knew then that's why he looked familiar, because he looked exactly like his brother.
Yeah.
So without going too much into that just yet, I mean, that's that was like actually less than a year after I moved here.
Wow.
And
that's
that,
amazing.
That was the beginning of me getting out of the whole top 40 band thing.
Yeah.
You know, getting in. And this is where it started. Like, I hadn't planned on doing any movie writing, but it was an opportunity through Frank that I'll talk about later.
Yeah.
And that's how I got started.
Wow. From the Red Onion?
To the... yeah.
To the Green Onion.
I don't know.
The metaphor for money or... yeah. I don't know.
Sure. Why not?
Why not?
Peeling the green onion.
They smell in the green, so...
Yeah. That's very cool.
So yeah. Frank Stallone sitting there. You're playing your top 40 songs. And I'm trying to think back to 1981. I consider myself somewhat of a musicologist, but not to the depth that most people are.
Okay.
But I'm thinking like 1981, your top 40 music, there's probably a little bit of Christopher Cross sprinkled in there.
Yes, and, yeah. Absolutely. I'm trying to think, you know, I can't, nothing comes to mind right now, but I'm glad you said one that,
yeah.
that I remember.
Like, what was the song that stood out to Frank Stallone where he's like, I want that guy?
Oh, I don't think it was any specific song. I remember he came up and introduced himself and he said, would you mind, he says, I really like the way you play and I'm starting a band. Actually, it's just a duo. I'm looking for a keyboard player. I've been playing around town just acoustic guitar and singing, and I'd like to have a keyboard player.
Oh, cool.
And he took me out into his Jaguar on a break, and he played me some of his original songs, which I really liked. They were kind of ballad, James Taylor type things.
Yep.
And Frank was a great singer and great writer and good guitar player. So I auditioned for his band like a day or two later and at his house. And he said that he had heard about 10 keyboard players, and he said, the job is yours if you want it. And I said, I would love it, because, again, this is less than a year after moving out to Los Angeles.
Come on, and we're talking 1981. I think Rocky I came out in the late 70s, right?
Yeah.
And his brother was in that. He sings a song in the Take Me Back.
Take Me Back.
And Frank Stallone had, at that point, was trying to be a pop star singer, right?
That's
and I actually have one of his old kind of, he did an album of like big band hits.
Oh, yeah.
It's called like Mac the Knife or something like that.
Oh, yeah.
I still had that CD.
I haven't heard that.
I enjoyed it. You know, his version of Mac the Knife is pretty damn good, but.
Hey, you know, it's Mac the Knife.
Yeah.
You know, hey.
And sometimes he plays at the, there's a vibrato bar.
I know that
right?
place.
Yeah. And so but this is kind of a really hot time for Frank Stallone.
Yeah.
And obviously his brother being his brother.
Yeah.
So this, and you come out here a year in and this happens to you. This is exciting stuff.
It is exciting. And, you know, I have to be honest, I was attracted by the last name, Frank Stallone.
Of
you know,
course.
But the more I got to know Frank and his music, I realized that he is a talent separate and apart from his brother.
He really is. Yeah.
And it's, you know, it's admittedly a tough situation to be in when your brother is that huge and you're trying to make it in the business your own way, you know. But I really came to admire his work, and we really hit it off musically. We connected creatively.
That's great.
So it was just Frank and I playing around clubs in L.A. We were doing a couple of cover songs, a couple of James Taylor songs. I played piano, and I also harmonized vocals with Frank, and Frank played guitar. And I really enjoyed that. It was intimate. We played small clubs, and audiences seemed to enjoy it. Eventually, we got into forming an entire rock band with drums and guitar and bass and Frank and myself. And if I can go down this road here
please
with
do.
You. Because this is, poor Peter has heard this a million times.
Maybe we can switch it up for Peter. Just throw in a.
I'll try.
There's a zebra there. I didn't know that. I never heard that part.
For those that don't know, Peter Hackman is your manager, and he's responsible for you being on our show. And it's an honor that you're on, and thank you to Peter for making this happen.
Absolutely.
Because it's really a big
deal. So we were rehearsing on the MGM lot that Sylvester Stallone had gotten us a soundstage to rehearse, which was really cool every day driving on the lot to rehearse with a band.
Right? Yeah.
And it wasn't a huge soundstage, but it was, you know, it was on the MGM lot. It was such an exciting thing. And, you know, you'd see stars walking around. just amazing to me. Again, culture shock. I was like, wow.
Oh, totally.
We're really in Hollywood now, you know.
Yeah.
And one day we were rehearsing and Sylvester came down, unannounced. We didn't know he was coming, and came with his entourage because 1981, he was, you know, huge.
He had to have an entourage, yeah.
He had to have an entourage. Huge star, huge world-renowned star. And
we're talking entourages before entourage was even a thing.
That's
right?
True.
It really, yep. Yeah.
That's true. Yeah. You know, the bodyguards and the assistants and the whole deal.
Yep.
And I think there were like six people that came in with him.
Wow.
And he listened to his play. I was kind of, because I didn't expect, even Frank didn't expect his brother to come down. But here I am sitting in the soundstage playing keyboards with Frank Stallone, and all of a sudden Sylvester Stallone walks in. And we played for a little bit. We took a break, and Frank introduced all of us to his brother, and that was surreal. You know, it was great. He was very cordial, very nice to talk to. And then Frank and Sly went off into a corner and were talking softly about something, and it wasn't my business until we came back, rehearsed a little bit more. We said goodbye to Sly, and Frank said, "Could you please stick around after everybody leaves? There's something I want to tell you about."
To you specifically.
To me.
Yeah. Okay.
And if I jump around too much,
it's all good.
Just put me back on track.
Dustin knows I do that. So
we generally digress a lot, and then one of us probably brings it back most of the time.
Good.
Yeah.
We'll bring you back.
We'll bring you back.
We'll bring you back.
Take me back.
Nice.
You like that?
Yeah, I do.
So Frank came over to me after everybody left, and he said, "My brother just told me that he just signed on to write and direct the sequel to Saturday Night Fever, and it's going to be called Staying Alive after one of the Bee Gees songs." And I said, "Wow, that's just unbelievable, you know?"
Yeah.
Because I was like one of the first people to find this out because it was his brother. And he said, "My brother told me that I could write and submit songs if I wanted, but knowing that I'm going to be up against a lot of name artists, producers, songwriters, you know, everybody that hears about a project like this is going to be submitting material." So he said, "Frank, just understand that that's your competition, and also understand that I'm not going to take anything into this movie just because you're my brother. I have to be very careful about that." And Frank understood that. So still, I was wondering why he was telling me this. And he said, "Would you like to try and write some songs with me?"
Wow.
Now, consider, I hadn't written a song up to that point.
Really?
And, I mean, a couple instrumentals, you know, I dabbled in it back east as a hobby while I was doing cover bands and going to school and all that stuff. But I had not written a pop song. I had not tried to write a pop song. Now,
wow.
I could have said, and I kind of felt like saying, "Hey, Frank, you know, I've never done this."
Right. The Red Onion is fine, Frank.
That's right.
Yeah.
This is a whole different level we're talking about.
Yeah.
I didn't say that, luckily. Oh, yeah, Frank, that sounds like a great idea, you know? And
Until you make it.
That's right. And we went to Frank's place in Bel Air, and he had a grand piano there, and we just started throwing ideas back and forth. And again, I'll get on to this story, and you can pull me back if I get too far out.
It's all good.
But we wrote three songs together, just the two of us, and then we brought a friend of Frank's in named Joe Esposito.
Yeah.
To write two other songs.
Of Karate Kid fame.
We know Joe.
We know Joe.
Well, not personally, but we know Joe.
Great guy. Great guy. Great singer.
Yeah, you know, great singer.
And
we know he's performing in March.
Where?
Is it the Roxy or the...
Yeah.
It's right next to the Roxy, I think.
Yeah.
It might be the Roxy.
I think it might be the Roxy.
Yeah.
Is it a part of a review of some sort? Or
it's like the songs of Joe Esposito.
Yeah.
So he's doing
really?
Like all the songs that he's been a part of soundtrack-wise.
That's
and then
phenomenal.
His own personal stuff and then standards and covers and whatnot.
I got to talk to him.
You do? Yeah. Jump on.
Mid-March.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
He just started promoting it recently.
Yeah.
So
we just heard about it.
That's great.
Yeah.
If you ever get a chance to interview him, he's phenomenal. He's a great guy.
Well, I think we're going to the show.
Oh, good.
Yeah, we're,
good.
Yeah, we're planning on that.
Excellent. Yeah. So three songs by Frank and I, two songs, the three of us, Frank and Joe and I.
Oh, and can I just jump in? What are you given like a timeline at this point? Is this like a race against the clock? Do you is it like a cushiony schedule? Like what's
You know what? It was great because there wasn't a deadline at that point.
Okay.
It was really like the movie hadn't even gone into production.
Oh, okay. So it was like, we need three songs by tomorrow. No, and you guys are like, oh, okay.
No.
Okay.
And that's good that it wasn't.
Okay. Yeah.
You know,
yeah.
It was
yeah.
very relaxed.
That's awesome.
And so, yeah, we had these five songs that we had come up with. And Frank said, I'm going to pay to go into a professional recording studio and get these at least demoed to a point where my brother can hear it as a band rather than just, you know, a piano vocal demo.
Yeah.
This was my first, also my first opportunity to get into a professional studio. And that was a great experience
by
itself. Yeah. It was a big deal.
Because we're talking at what point, timeline wise, you came on in 81. Is this 82 now?
This is 82, yeah.
Okay.
Early 82.
Wow.
Wow, jeez.
And
pretty exciting.
Oh, yeah. it was surreal. It really was. So anyway, we wrote these five songs. We spent 2 days in the studio, came up with a master cassette, because cassettes were the big thing back then.
This is going to be a game changer, a cassette.
Yeah, remember? Yeah. What's odd is that cassettes are coming back.
I know.
I don't understand that. But, you know.
My son, who's five, has a Walkman, and I still have all my soundtrack collections, and he listens to those on his Walkman. And then the new tapes come out, and he's like, oh, I love this tape. And his friends come over, they're like, what's that?
Yeah, yeah. Well, I'll talk about a Walkman in a different way.
Okay, cool.
A little bit later on.
Okay.
So Frank took this cassette tape over to his brother. And the way Frank told me the story later that evening, he said, I'm sorry, Vince, I have to tell you, my brother hated all five songs. Didn't just say they weren't right for the movie. He actually told his brother, sorry, Frank.
You know, I hate this.
I hate all five songs.
Wow.
And that was like, you know, one of these so close, so far situations.
Yeah. Yeah.
It's
where
there we were for a minute.
Like, all five?
Yeah.
Really? Come on, all five?
All five.
All five.
All five. And Frank said, you know, I didn't expect that kind of response. It was pretty extreme.
Were any of those songs that ended up making it on the soundtrack?
I'll get to that.
Okay, okay. Sorry.
That's the fun part of the story. So, but it's a windy road.
Mm. I took Dramamine, so I'm good.
So,
I want to make the noise, but I can't. I'm laughing.
So that was obviously a very huge disappointment.
Yeah.
But I have to give Frank a lot of credit, because a day later he called me up and he said, listen, I know it's going to sound crazy, but would you be up for taking one more stab at this? And I said, Frank, what is the use? Your brother just rejected not one out of five, 100% of the material that we submitted. He said, I know. He said, I just have a feeling there's a type of song that my brother's looking for this movie. And if I'm right, we didn't include any of that. We didn't include a song of that style in our first batch, and no other artist that is submitting material has done this. I said, well, what's the parameters? He said, I think we need to come up with a high-energy, fast rock tune with theatrical elements.
Yep.
Mm-hmm.
And I said, okay. So
awesome.
He said, can I come over the next day? And you know, I had a garage. I didn't have a professional studio. We had a communal garage of this house we were all living in. It was all musicians. And little piano, and Frank had brought over this cassette boombox, big monstrosity like this, and
weighed 60 pounds.
It was huge.
Yeah,
and he said, sit down at the piano. He says, I didn't bring my guitar because I don't think this is going to be a guitar oriented or acoustic guitar oriented song. So just sit down at the piano with those parameters and just play, and we'll both know when you arrive at something, you know, that's worth expanding on. And long story short, within 30 minutes, we had this idea. And we had an intro, a verse, a chorus. And that was it. And Frank had no melody at this point. He just had me playing keyboards. He had one lyric in mind for it. And he said, okay, after we did this 30 minutes of work and we had this idea, he says, let's tape this onto this little cassette boombox. Just as a rough demo.
Yeah.
And he said, so I want you to do the intro, I want you to do a verse chorus, another verse chorus, throw something in the middle, you know, improvise. It doesn't matter. Well, it's just going to be like a placemat for now. And then just come up with some ending. And he said, just we'll do this like 3-minute little thing. And I was, you know, I was up for that. I knew exactly what he was going for. And so I sat down and I played, Frank pressed record, and he had this one melody and one lyric that he sang. The rest of it was all just humming ideas. He didn't even have any, but he had this one lyric, one hook line. And so we recorded it onto this boombox, and Frank said, okay, I'm going to take this tape over to my brother. I said, Frank, let's go into the studio like we did, at least. Let's finish the song and, you know, go into a studio with musicians and record it professionally. He said, you know what?
Yeah.
I ran out of money with the first batch, 5 songs and 2 days in the studio. He said, I just don't have the money to do it. But he said, the good thing is I know my brother well enough that he will at least be able to tell us if we're in the right direction or not with this, with this idea. Yep. So... I love telling the story. I told it a million times.
I'm riveted by it.
So Frank said, I'll let you know what he says. You know, it might be a day or two because I want to get over his over at his house and sit and listen to it with him. So I'm not sure that's going to be happening today or tomorrow, but it'll happen very soon. I'll call you. I said, okay. So that night, I took my wife Beth out to dinner, and I wanted to. I really wanted to distract myself from all this because,
of course,
you know, I honestly did not allow my hopes to get to a point where I thought this was even going to be a possibility based on what happened already. You know,
hard not to though.
Yeah,
it is very, very hard. Especially again, this is my first exposure to this project of this magnitude.
Yeah.
So we came back from dinner and we had this little ancient. What's ancient now, but we had this little AT&T white answering machine. I remember sitting on our side table beside our bed, and we got in, and the little message indicator light was blinking.
You have one new message.
And I thought, I said to my wife, I said, I'm pretty sure that that's Frank, and I'm pretty sure I don't want to hear what he has to say, because I'm not, you know, I would rather just not even listen to it. And she said, well, what if it's somebody from our family that's have, you know, family emergency or something?
The empathetic wife comes in and says, yes, that's right. We need to look at the big picture of life.
That's right. And so she went over and she says, I'm going to press play. So you press play. And out of this little answering machine, I can't imitate him, but comes this voice saying, Vinny, heard the song, home run, can't wait to hear it when it's finished. And it was Sylvester Stallone.
Whoa.
And now he didn't have to call me himself, obviously, but Frank...
Right.
With his seeing his brother's reaction, he probably said, Sly, you need to, you know, surprise Vince there. So, I mean, I thought I was dreaming. I thought this was unbelievable to me. And my wife started crying. She said, that really is him. I said, yeah. She said, it's unmistakable. So, we finished the song and we recorded it and it ended up being called Far From Over. And that was it ended up being the kind of the theme song of the movie.
It's the best song.
Thank you.
It really is.
And,
you know, we were up against the Bee Gees, and I forget who some of the other artists were on the record, but the fact that this song, and let me backtrack a little bit. So my mom and dad came out to visit, and I was able to take them down onto the soundstage, the set of Staying Alive, where they were filming this big dance scene. So imagine this, you know, my mom and dad are with me. My wife, unfortunately, could not get off work. We get down and we're surrounded by, Frank and I are surrounded by Sylvester Stallone, John Travolta, the, you know, some of the other cast members, the dancers, the choreographer. And we are, at this point, the heroes because we have come up with the song that his brother was looking for.
Yeah.
Just like Frank had this gut instinct, and he turned out to be absolutely correct.
Well, the movie is a drama, but it's also a musical as well, mm-hmm. because music is such an important component, the most important component to the film outside of John Travolta, of course. And for those people who haven't seen it, it's a continuation of Tony Manero, his character, and he's cocky, he's brash, and there's a lot of... I saw it in the theater as a kid with my mom, and I loved it because I just thought John Travolta looks so cool on screen. Yeah. And your song specifically, Far From Over, that it's a part of my workout mix still to this day.
Wow.
There is a DJ that Dustin and I both love, this guy, DJ A.
Yep.
Right. Okay. And he has these three mixes. They're called the Blood Brother mixes.
Okay.
And he actually mixes a lot of your music in between like dialogue from films and other inspirational songs from the 80s. And that song, when that comes on and it just hits, you know, for me, the impact I feel watching.
I think that we both, Zach and I both bonded over the fact that we both like work out to 80s inspirational soundtracks.
Okay.
And and your music sort of being a foundation kind of running through a lot of that. So, so that's one of the reasons why we not only, you know, connected, but then, we're like, this is like a movement, you know, the 80s life.
And that song, I don't think there really had been a song up until that point that sounds like that song.
We got lucky with that.
I think people need to revisit it if they haven't heard it or if they haven't heard it in a while. Listen to it again because it's a reminder.
I'm sure you already played it like 14 times.
Oh, I will.
Within this interview. Like we've already heard it underneath us a million times.
Might be playing right now.
Playing right now.
But it is it's this anthem of like, just, I mean, what inspired you to just hit? Like,
wait, and it is replayed a lot, right? Like, don't people use it a lot in montages now?
Absolutely.
As like,
it was just used on American Horror Story.
Yes.
The newest season of that.
Yes. It opened up. I always hear it. I'm like, oh, there it is.
Because it's a big 80s thing, that they were doing. And I was sitting there, because I loved the show, and I had no idea. And here the show starts, and there's, in fact, I remember I was up late. And I had taped it, and I just started to fall asleep, and I heard, I woke up, and here is on TV, American Horror Story, starting out with my song.
I hope you got some residuals for that.
I hope you invoiced them the next morning.
I hope so, too. I'm sure I will. Yeah, and it's been licensed for a number of things, as has some of the stuff from Rocky IV. I'm very, very blessed about that, but... The best start of the Far From Over, the best part of the Far From Over story.
Yeah.
So we had this song. We were the heroes, Frank and I. And 2 days later, Frank calls me. And he was laughing. He said, "You're never going to believe this." I said, "Okay."
Peter's laughing.
And he said, "My brother has found a place in the movie for all five songs that he rejected at the start." And now I'm thinking, and I'm still thinking this to this day, how can a guy go from hating five songs?
Hate is a strong word.
It is. Right. Like I say, it's not just, I'm not sure it's right for the movie. Yep. It was hate.
Hate.
Yeah.
How can he go from that to, in the space of maybe 2 weeks, saying, okay, I like these songs now enough that I'm going to put them in the movie. And it all had to do with Far From Over. That was like the game changer in his mind.
He was being a moody guy. Sorry, moody girl.
Very good.
I love that song.
Actually, I do too. Thank you for mentioning. Not too many people mention that. It's always Far From Over or Never Gonna Give You Up.
Look, I had the biggest crush on her name, Cynthia Rhodes. Yeah, she does the "I'm Never Gonna Give You Up." That's the other song with Frank, right?
Yeah.
I mean, I had a huge crush on her in that movie and Runaway, and in the way Tony was treating her, I'm like, "You're such a scumbag, man." Yeah. She's such a good girl.
Check this out. So, I love telling this story too. So we had all the songs. The band had recorded them. Now it's time to put vocals on. Cynthia comes in the studio. Okay, I'm sitting at a grand piano. She sits right next to me, puts her arm around me, and starts, you know, she says, "Well, how are we going to do this? What part do you want?" And I was, again, talk about, you know, culture shock and complete surprise and a little bit taken aback. You know, it was like she was so friendly and outgoing. And here I knew she was the star, the female star of this movie.
She is, and
it was a big deal, big deal. And she was sweet. And we worked out the song where Frank's going to sing, where she was going to sing. And it was a great experience.
I need to know someone who's warmer than the sunshine. Could be that you're the one for me. Touch me deeper, darling. All my emotions started. Come to me now and you will see.
Then I'm never gonna give you up for someone else's love. Never gonna let you go and lose the one I love.
I have a 5-year-old son, and he loves your music specifically. He loves the 80s music. When I say, "Bodie, what's your favorite music?" He goes, "The Blood Brother mix." And I go, what is it about that, though? He's like, "I like the din, 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 you know," and he's trying to work it out in his head. But he also loves yacht rock music in that genre, and I would lump those two songs into that kind of like that mellow late 70s, early 80s vibe, which I grew up on too. I mean, James Taylor, Carly Simon, Carole King,
Christopher Cross,
Kenny Loggins, and, you know, Stephen Bishop, and another underrated musician, in my opinion.
I agree.
But, you know, this music that just, it's like, it's great background music, a great mellow music to just relax to. So those songs come on and, you know, and he'll kind of hum along to it. And I'm like saying, wait a minute, this is timeless. If a 5-year-old can get into this as much as a 43-year-old or 65 or whatever, it doesn't matter. That, to me, tells me it's timeless.
Yeah.
So you've created timeless music. You really have.
I've been blessed.
You really have. You know, and you go from the success of this movie, Staying Alive.
Oh, and sorry, was the hook Far From Over? Was that the hook
that Frank Stallone had? The only lyric that he had.
Yeah.
Save me, darling.
So he was just like humming it.
Yeah.
Far From Over.
And he didn't have, we didn't end up with any of the melodies that he was humming at all.
Really?
Just that one hook line, and that's what caught Sylvester Stallone's ears.
I love that.
I was playing it the other day on my headphones, and I hear the sound that, din, din, you know, in this. You created this cinematic journey in a 4-minute song that really just has these highs and lows and just a urgency to it. And it's really fantastic.
Yeah. You asked earlier what was, you know, how did I come up with the style? Well, I was a big fan of progressive rock music from the 1970s. And everything you just described, that's what progressive rock is. There's the peaks and valleys. There's changing moods within the same piece. And even though we were only working within a 4-minute format, you know, progressive rock was like 10, 15 minutes long, you know, a piece of music. But I borrowed elements from that style.
Okay.
And I took a chance with that. Frank, also, we both took a chance thinking, okay, we're gonna apply this to a pop song.
Mm-hmm.
And I didn't think we'd get away with it.
Yeah, because up until this point, the songs you had created for the soundtrack were more in tune with like Moody Girl and I Never Want to Give Up, more mellow.
Yes.
And, yeah.
Yeah.
And then you create this anthem.
Yeah. And
on a whim after you get rejected.
That's right. That's right. And
It's never giving up.
So good.
It's like I say, I've told the story a million times, and I still love telling it because it gives me that feeling that I had when we were going through it. It was like, wow, this is it's still magical.
Truly, did you save the answering machine message?
I didn't. Oh, I didn't. I didn't know how to do it back then. I should have. I know.
Do you know the song "Answering Machine" by Rupert Holmes?
I know. Is there really a song called?
Yeah, it's pretty bad. He also has a song about.
It's just a weird aside. That's a bad song. Anyway, do you know that song?
No, but just this idea of that he's going to call his wife or his girlfriend to propose to her, and right before he goes to ask her if she wants to marry him, the answer machine cuts out, and she calls him back. This is all in the song. She calls him back and expresses her love to him, and is about to answer whether she's gonna accept the proposal, and his answer machine goes out.
Oh man!
And it goes.
Can
back
you imagine?
And forth.
Can you imagine?
Great
Rupert Holmes,
great device.
Escape the Pina Colada song fame. You know, device. He had another hit. Anyways, I'm just saying.
Always say to Zach, this is also this is total digression, but voice messages now, like people, because Zach, when I call him, he's like, hey, this is, you know, you say like your number, and then you're like, leave a message at the tone. I'm like, first of all, nobody needs to know what to do with the tone. Everybody knows. If you're
a human being,
you know what's going on. But then the tone. Then the voicemail lady comes in after he says, leave a message. And she's like, please leave a message.
Yeah.
So now we have it twice.
Yeah.
Time is now wasted. Think about how much time. Yeah. So I just say, like, do we really even need, do we need any of that?
Long story short, I'm changing my outgoing message.
You?
Yeah.
Thanks a lot.
Yeah. Colin, yeah. All right.
I'm terrible with leaving messages. Peter knows this because it goes on and on and on. In fact, I use the editing function, you know, where the girl says, you know, if you want to re-record anything, it's like nine times out of ten, I hit, you know, it's like I'm recording a song.
Right.
I wish I had that back in the day when I would call girls up and ask if they wanted to go out with me, and I'd leave this horrible message, and that's probably why they didn't call me back. Far From Over, so Staying Alive comes out in 83, and I mean, a lot of people consider it to be a cheesy movie or whatever. Look, I personally enjoy it, and my whole take is, if you like something, that's all that matters.
All
it doesn't matter what other people say, critics and whatnot. But that song, I remember recording it off of the TV on a cassette player so I could have it for myself. And Columbia Records comes out and is one of the CDs or the cassettes I bought for a dime, you know, or a penny.
Wow.
Or whatever. I think I might still owe them money. That's a whole other story.
Oh, yeah. You're talking about the CD clubs?
Yeah, the CD clubs.
Oh, yeah, I remember
cassette
those.
Club before that.
Yep.
But so you had success from that, and then did that movie propel you into Rocky IV?
It prepared me for. Do we have time to talk about all this?
It's up to you. Okay. Cool.
Because I can go on and on. Like I say, you know.
We would love that.
So, it set me up for the circumstances for Rocky IV. Let me put it that way. And the story goes. My manager was also Frank Stallone's manager. That's how I ended up with a manager. I got to know Robin Garb is his name. And after we did Staying Alive and he heard Far From Over and all, he said, Vince, you know, you should consider scoring movies. And I honestly, at that point, had not thought about it.
Okay.
The only thing at that point I had written pop songs for a movie.
Right.
But in those pop songs, like Far From Over, there was some cinematic elements to it.
Totally.
Absolutely.
Moody Girl, for sure.
Yeah.
And so Robin said, you know, maybe we should consider getting you up for some film work. And he said, along those lines, he said, he happened to be the music supervisor for all of Sylvester Stallone's films up to that point.
Okay.
And he said, I know for a fact, nobody else knows this yet, that Sylvester Stallone had a falling out with Bill Conti after Rocky III. It was over a song, a vocal song, I believe. I don't know all the details. Mm. And he said, he's going to need somebody to score this movie. And he's talking to me. And I know where he's going with this and thinking he's either playing a joke on me or... You know, something is not right about this. And he said, I think you should go after this movie.
Yeah.
Scoring this movie. I said, Robin, you know what I've done because you manage me. I haven't even scored a movie, and you're talking about the fourth movie in one of the biggest franchises ever.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah, because up until this point, Rocky, I think, was maybe the only franchise off the top of my head that I can think of that had spawned more than just a sequel.
Yeah.
Outside of Star Wars.
I think you're right about that, actually.
Yeah. Oh, that's an interesting question.
Yeah.
And he said, now, yes, after I said that, he said, it's admittedly a long shot, you know.
Yeah.
But he said, what do you have to lose? You know, here's my game plan. He came up with a game plan. This is what I suggest. He said, I know all the plot points, the main plot points of the movie, because I'm working, you know, very side by side with Sly, and he's feeding me. He's telling me all these ideas. So I know them firsthand.
Oh, my God.
He said, I'm just going to feed you these ideas. And he said, you know, it's a Rocky movie, so you know they're going to need a training scene. They're going to need a fight scene, obviously, the big boxing scene.
Yeah.
And there's going to be a couple tender moments between Rocky and Adrian. And I happen to know that there's going to be a death of a big character in the franchise.
Oh, my gosh.
Yeah.
I'm getting chills. And
he said, and let me say.
I just put a scarf on Zach. Hold on one
second. Hold me.
You know, let me say that, you know, when Sly came down to that soundstage and all this stuff was going on, I'm a fan of Rocky, you know, the whole franchise. I came into this as, wow, this is, you know, one of the biggest movie stars, one of my favorite movies. Rocky won one of my favorite movies of all time.
Ditto,
And one of the most well-known score. I mean, there are very few people that hear Rocky and are like, what's that?
Yeah.
You know, when you, the second you hear it. So there's a little pressure.
There's
in the
pressure.
Sense. Yes, I guess is what we're getting at.
You know,
there's a little,
Robin said, so he's talking, he's telling me all this stuff, and I'm thinking, we're talking about a Rocky movie here. We're talking about music for a Rocky movie. Anyway, he said, do five songs, do five demos.
Like, no, that's the bad number.
Yeah, five.
I do five. People don't like five.
I know, right?
After, I hate five.
After Staying Alive, that's right. I didn't even make that the connection.
Like, no, I'll do half a song. How about that? Yeah.
So, he said, just make demos to the best of your ability. We know that you can't, you know, afford to go into a big studio and hire an orchestra and all that stuff. Just do the best with what you have. And I had, at this point, my wife and I had moved out of the house into our own apartment. And the den of this apartment, I had a piano, a synthesizer, and an 8-track Fostex reel-to-reel tape, analog tape machine.
Wow.
That was what I had to record on.
Yeah.
And he said, just use that, come up with some ideas, and when you're done, play them for me. And we'll talk about them and see if, you know, what we need to do to get them presentable.
Okay.
And I said, okay.
I love that he had a game plan, by the way. I feel like you never hear about this anymore.
No.
Like people like you know, giving you that kind of boost that you need. Like, here's the game plan, we're going to do this, and this is the step, and here are the steps. It's like, now it's just like, good luck out there. Have a good time. Are you making me money? Thanks so much.
That's right.
Yeah.
That's right. Well,
just wanted to say that.
The game plan was Robin's, and it was excellent.
That's fantastic. And it sounds,
really was. And the first piece that I came up with, the first melody I came up with when I sat down at the piano, ended up being Training Montage. So that was the training scene. That was I knew that that was going to be one of the most iconic moments in the movie.
Yes.
So I wanted to get out of the way, see if I could even do it first to my liking.
Okay. The big challenge, the biggest one.
Yep. And the nice thing about all this is I had nobody breathing down my neck. It wasn't, you know, Robin said, just go off and do your thing. But Sylvester Stallone knew nothing about this. So I didn't have him as the director saying, I want this and this and this.
Yeah.
It was very freeing for me because you put that together with the fact that I was convinced I wasn't going to get this job.
No.
So it was just like, I'm going to have fun with this. You know?
Yeah, because Bill Conti up to this point, Bill Conti was one of the next to, you know, just off the top of my head, he was one of the top composers
Absolutely.
For film.
Absolutely.
Right?
Yeah.
On the level of Star Wars as well. And, you know, I'm blanking right now on the name of the composer for Star Wars.
John Williams.
Yeah. I mean, but like John Williams, Bill Conti. Yeah, you know, that guy. Bill Conti, though, was
right
one of the top.
Yeah.
You know, and here you are coming in.
Yeah.
Still fresh.
Yes.
And new to the game.
Yes.
A little overwhelming, you know.
Completely.
Right? Yeah.
But again, it was so surreal to me and so impossible that, you know, I hear all this stuff coming at me. Bill Conti's out, you know, maybe you could. And it's like, I know I'm not going to get this, so I am going to have fun. I'm going to picture myself as if I'm writing music for a Rocky movie.
I mean, I think this is the key to everything, what you're saying.
Yeah.
Like when as artists, you know, it's just like having fun.
Absolutely.
You got to do it. And there are so many reasons why you don't always achieve that.
That's
and
correct.
It's like, come back to that. Sorry to interrupt.
That's all right.
I really appreciate that thought. It's like, yes.
Yeah. So I said, okay, Robin. So I wrote that, you know, training montage first. Then I did a couple little piano synthesizer string little like minute and a half pieces for tender moments, you know, and then I came up with this death and funeral theme, you know, again, not knowing, he didn't even tell me who it was. He says, all I can tell you is it's going to be a major character that's gonna die in this. And
I was gonna say, you didn't have, it's not like you had a script ahead of time to go over.
No, it was just general ideas at this point.
Okay.
And so I made this demo, and it sounded okay. You know, it sounded it didn't sound professional. It was a good idea tape for me to use as a reference. And Robin said, "What can we do to fix this up without spending a lot of money?" And I had a friend in Lake Charles, Louisiana, Ed Frugé, and he had a professional studio, a beautiful studio. And I said, "Ed, you know, this is a long shot." I told him about this. I said, "This is a long shot, but can I bring this tape over to you? I'll fly over to Louisiana and we'll spend a week and see what we can do. And if, you know, if this ends up doing something, you can be my co-producer on this." And he loved that idea.
Awesome.
You
know? Yeah.
Wow. That's
so
great deal.
We went over there and, you know, we added to my demo. Luckily, Ed had connections to one of the local universities, and the head of the orchestra at that university said, "Oh man, this is this is great opportunity for us too."
Yeah, totally.
So everything just kind of came together, and then we ended up with this great sounding demo of five songs. And I played it for Robin. When I was back from Lake Charles, and he said, "Wow." He said, "Now we're ready. I feel like we have the ammunition." And I said, "Well, what are you going to do?" He says, "I'm going to wait for the right moment, and I'll keep you posted. I'll tell you if anything develops, of course." He called me up one day. He said, "So Sly was in his trailer by himself today, taking a break from the production." He said, "I saw that as my golden opportunity, and I had a Walkman with me and a pair of headphones."
Here we go, Walkman story.
And he said, "I had your cassette in this Walkman." And he said, the way he tells the story, he said, "Sly, I just want you to listen to something." He didn't tell him anything about it. And, of course, Sly says, "Well, what am I listening to?" He says, "I'm not going to say anything. Just put the headphones on and press play."
Interesting.
And the way Robin tells the story, within 30 seconds, Sly jumped out of his chair and said, "Who the F is this?" And he said, "That's the guy that wrote Far From Over and all the other stuff in Staying Alive with Your Brother." Yeah. He said, "Vinny?" He said, "Yes, Vinny."
Vinny!
That's what he called him.
Yeah.
Vinny.
And he said, "You got to hire him. He's got to do this film." And Robin's telling me this, you know, on the phone. He said, "You got the job."
Oh, my gosh.
Wow.
Fantastic.
Now I was frightened out of my, you know, mind.
Because
now it was real.
Now you got to fly out the orchestra from the college and you got to put him in your apartment.
That's right. Where am I going to find room for all these people?
The den's not big enough.
But, you know, I remember looking over at my wife, you know, as I'm on the phone, and she heard what the outcome was. I got off the phone. I said, now what do I do?
Yeah.
You know, it really is the mouse that roared. You know, I didn't think I was going to get this. And now it hit me. So Sylvester Stallone, Rocky movie, Bill Conti out, me in. I got to fill that hole, you know.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Your brain needs support, and new Ollie Brainy Chews are a delightful way to take care of your cognitive health. Made with scientifically backed ingredients like Thai ginger, L-theanine, and caffeine, Brainy Chews support healthy brain function and help you find your focus, stay chill, or get energized. Be kind to your mind and get these nootropic chews at Ollie.com. That's OLLY.com. These statements have not been evaluated by the Food and Drug Administration. This product is not intended to diagnose, treat, cure, or prevent any disease.
But, you know, and again, I have to go back to progressive rock. That was what I used sort of at the, one of the reasons I moved out to LA, one of the bands that influenced me was Toto. Okay.
Oh, Toto's nice. Fantastic. Okay. Right. Talk about session musicians too.
That was, that was what inspired me to come out here and be a session
99.
Musician. Woo. Yeah. And that's very good.
Thanks. My son sings it all the time. I'm not joking.
Really?
Yeah, I'm not
joking. Your five-year-old son?
Yeah, because we're getting up to the 100th day of school. And I go, well, next week, what's the number that comes right before 100? He goes, 99. Woo!
It's a great song.
It is a great song. And, oh, man.
And I'm trying to think where this would have been in the Toto timeline. I think... I'm not sure. I think Rosanna might have been out by that time.
Yeah, because if we're talking like 80... We're talking 84 at this point?
Yeah.
Late 83, 84?
Yeah.
Yeah, I think so.
Rosanna, Toto 4, I think, had already been released.
Oh, such a great album.
Africa and all that stuff. And that was inspiring to me. And
progressive
rock. So what I did for Rocky 4, my blueprint, and again, as I was doing this, I had no idea that I was going to get it. I didn't think I was, so I just said, the hell with it. I'm going to bring in progressive rock elements, little Toto.
Uh-huh.
And I'm going to, I had this idea from the beginning. It was right when Phil Collins came out with his gigantic drum sound, okay? Mm,
yeah.
It was like identifiably, you know?
I can feel it.
So I wanted, you know, it's very good.
Yeah, nice.
God, you guys are.
I can do 99 too.
Jeez.
No.
What a team.
I'll tell you exactly something. Like Phil.
When's your record coming out?
Sometime next summer.
Tonight.
We actually want to do a live podcast where we put together a band.
That's the real reason why we invited you in, actually. So,
we got you on keys. No, I'm kidding. No, but I'm not joking about that we want to do songs of our favorite songs from movies and have some guests on as well.
Wow.
So maybe down
Please
the road.
Please keep me in mind.
I will. Fantastic.
Yeah,
that would be really cool.
I'd love to be a part of that.
Wow, that'd be great. That would be an honor. That would be an honor.
So, you know, I had these elements in my mind and I wanted the drums. This was from the very beginning. I had it in my mind. Bill Conti is a great composer.
Yes.
The way he used rock and roll in his scores, however, and it was how everybody did at that point. It was like orchestra, rock band. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
The rock band was just there. It's just, okay, that's, you know, bring a couple of drum tracks and guitar and bass just to make sure there's some rock elements. But it wasn't really thought about. It wasn't really focused on.
Yeah.
It was like supporting the orchestra.
And otherwise, it was a musical, like Eddie and the Cruisers.
That's right.
Where, you know, John Cafferty's music was the soundtrack, but it was a musical.
That's right.
You know.
So, that's right. Yeah. So I had the thought from the very beginning that I wanted the rock elements to be the forefront for my score. Mm-hmm. And luckily, when my orchestrator came in, Jeremy Lubbock, who's absolutely amazing, worked with David Foster, worked with so many people. And he got it right away when he heard my demos. And he said, Vince, the orchestra has to support the synths. That's the way this has to be.
Uh-huh.
And he got it right from the beginning. And he said, we're going to have orchestra. And it's, you know, it's going to be great. It's going to be big. But your synthesizer sounds that you're using are so cool. I wouldn't want to replace them. I just want to support them with the real elements. And we had that formula from the very beginning. And that was a blueprint that I used to create the music.
You know, it's so interesting. So we on our Instagram page, we put out, we were promoting the episode, and we asked our followers if they had any questions for you. And it's funny because some of the questions have already been answered. Like, there's this guy, his name's Alex, and his handle is Unicron's Beard, which I think is pretty funny. But he has asked what your prog rock influences were and if they kind of, you know, bled over into your actual music. And then there you go with that Toto story, which is so fantastic. And then also, I have to tell you that Derek Allen, he's the DJ who does the Blood Brother mix. He apparently, you know, he said he loves your music and has been a big influence on him, and which I think is a really...
That's great.
Yeah, and we're a big fan of his, obviously, and that's a big compliment. And then the Talk Back podcast, which is another podcast that follows us, was asking specifically, you know, the method of creating music around a script or not reading a script. And then you came, like you said, you came up with these songs, this demo, without even just having like a smidgen.
Right.
So was the music that you created as the demo, was that pretty close to what you eventually created on screen, or was it totally different?
It was very close.
That's really great.
And what's really cool is the demo for Training Montage and the piece called War, which was the fight scene music. The demos that we had done with between myself and Ed in Louisiana and out in L.A., and all, they ended up being the record versions of the song. They were that good recording quality.
Wow.
But now that was before the movie was shot. So now the challenge is, you know, you see the scene and you have to make that song, which they all love, and they've temped the movie with my music, which was very cool. That helped me a lot.
Right.
Yeah.
But they had to cut up the music to fit the scenes. So now it was my job to rearrange these pieces to fit the movie and hit, you know, all the hits and everything. And so specifically in the case of Training Montage and War, there were some significant differences between the record version and the soundtrack version, specifically with War. There's a big story with that one, too.
I love it.
I got a big story.
So I was on the dubbing stage with the soundtrack, the dialogue editor, the music editor, and sound effects. Okay, so we're three of us in the back. And I found out later, it's very rare that a composer is allowed even to be, especially a first-time composer, to be on that stage when they're mixing all these elements.
Really?
Interesting.
Yeah. Okay. At that point, they told me, man, that was a rare thing.
You should feel lucky about yourself, Shane.
Yeah. and so this was the first time that Sly was going to see the fight scene with my music. Okay, he had heard War, he had been living with that song, but he hadn't seen it up against the footage yet. Okay, so this was the first time. God, I should never tell this story, and I've told it a million times.
That's the story we love.
Yeah, now you gotta keep going.
So, Sly came in again with his entourage and his wife Brigitte Nielsen at the time with her entourage.
Oh my gosh!
So they took up one row in the middle of this big theater.
Of course
down on the MGM lot, and I watched him. I just watched his body language from behind, you know, back in the back of the theater, just to see if I could tell if he's liking this or, you know. And of course, I couldn't tell anything. He was facing away from me, and, you know, he's sitting there watching the movie. And
that fur coat was in the way.
Yeah. I'm kidding. He might have had that on that day, actually. I remember that coat. You know, I saw him every once in a while. He'd lean over to his wife and say something or somebody else. But then the movie is over, okay? And they all stand up, getting ready to leave. And I notice that Sylvester is looking around the room, and he doesn't look happy.
Mm.
He's looking for somebody, and his eyes land on me. And I could tell, this was going to be bad. He obviously is upset about something, and I am the cause of it.
Mm. Yeah.
Again, put yourself in my place.
Yeah.
Sylvester Stallone.
Yeah.
You know, I'm a big fan of his, and I wanted more than anything else to please this guy.
Of course.
My first opportunity, you know, blah, blah, blah.
And Frank is like
not involved. This was after, you know, two, three years after Staying Alive. I mean, Frank was around, but he wasn't a part of the production.
Right.
Or the songwriting team.
Yeah.
And it happened to be the one day that my manager, Robin, could not be on set with me to run interference with Sylvester Stallone, because there's a whole thing.
You're right.
That's another thing. So so Sylvester is starting to walk up the aisle toward me with his entourage, okay, behind him. It's like this train of people coming forward with his, he's like the, you know, the lead of the train. And he was actually red in the face. He was this angry about something.
Oh, my gosh.
So he came up to me and he said, Vince, he said, he shook his head. He said, what the F did you do to that music? And I said, you know, I'm shaking in my boots, but I'm trying not to show that. I'm trying to be Mr. Confident, composer.
Yeah. Sure.
And luckily the words came to me, well, tell, you know, Sly, tell me what you don't like and I'll fix it.
Yeah.
That's luckily those words came to me rather than, oh, you know.
Right. Well, what did you do?
Yeah.
He did it. What?
And he said he could not vocalize what he meant. He said, I just hate it. It's back to the word hate again.
Oh,
he says,
no.
I just hate it. And I said,
strong word.
Boy.
And I said, what about it do you hate? He said, well, he said, the song war that we've been living with, I don't hear it like it is on the record. It sounds different to me.
Mm.
And I'm thinking to myself, okay, this is the intelligence level here. And I don't mean to be... I know where he was going with this, and I thought, this can't be, but it ended up actually being true. I said, Sly, I said, the length of the piece that I wrote is like 4.5 minutes long.
Yeah.
Your fight scene is 7.5 to 8 minutes long. I had to come up with different music. I couldn't just loop the song back to the beginning. Well, why not?
Oh, my God.
Oh, boy.
I said... Sly, I said, you wouldn't want me to do that. That would sound even worse than what you think you're hearing right now. He said, well, I just don't know about this new music. I just don't know, and I hate it. I just,
I hate the new 3.5 minutes or whatever you'd added.
He didn't even get to that point. He couldn't express that.
Ah.
He just said, I just don't like it.
Wow.
You know, I just don't like how it, and his description was, I don't like how it sounds now compared to how it did on the record. And I could not convince him that there was no other way. I had to add some new music to the theme. I said, Sly, the theme's always there. It's still the same as I wrote.
God. Yeah.
I know, but I just don't like it. So who comes to the rescue? Now you got to picture this scene. Behind Sly and Brigitte is next to him. Now he's going into me like this, okay? And she's just like looking like, what the heck? Why is my husband going off on this guy about something? And behind were Chartoff Winkler, who were the producers of the film.
Okay? Yeah.
They were Sly's boss, okay, basically.
Yeah.
They were behind Sly going like this to me. And I'm waving my hands for those of you who can't.
Yeah.
Waving their, you know, like, and I found out later, what they were trying to say to me is, don't listen to him. Don't pay any attention to what he's saying, okay? I didn't know that at the time. And again, remember, my manager was not here to run interference for me. Which I...
No, of course you're going to pay attention. It's it's your music. You just, he's coming at,
So Brigitte Nielsen saves the day. She said, Sly, she said, now, to set this up, it's a Rocky movie, okay? There are, you know, I'm going to exaggerate. There are already 50,000 trumpets and trombones and brass instruments on this record because it's a Rocky movie.
Yeah.
What does Brigitte Nielsen say? Maybe it just needs more trumpets, Sly. He goes, that's it.
Oh,
my gosh.
That's it.
It's going to be huge.
And then it clicked on, this is the level of, you know, there is no connection here.
Wow.
Yeah.
All I have to do is be a yes man.
Right.
Okay, got it. That's easy to do, Sly. I can do that. I'll go in the studio tomorrow and we'll fix it up. It was almost like the balloon deflated.
Right.
Yeah.
You know, the anger deflated.
Out of Sly.
Out of Sly. And thanks to his wife, you know.
Well, clearly there's a pattern, too, from going from the five songs that I hate on Staying Alive to suddenly I love those songs now that Far From... It's like, you know, you get somebody at a weird time, you know, but it's a lot of times you could say like, oh, yeah, yeah, I'll do that note. And what do? You remove one thing or you add one thing. Oh, it's so different now. This is amazing now.
Well, I didn't do anything. Yeah.
You didn't do anything, right?
No, I didn't do anything.
Didn't
and I never heard anything back.
I added some trumpet. Yeah. I added some trumpet. There you go.
If he would have would have said to me, I would have said, yeah,
the
I added some
trumpet's
more
a great video.
Yeah.
So you didn't add anything to it?
Didn't add anything.
That's even
I mean,
go.
I
That's
think we went funny. Into the studio, and I, my friend Casey was a synth programmer. He had this little sampler. So I think we put up like a solo trumpet. We were all laughing.
Yeah.
It's like we already had all these. How is this one little thing going to make any difference?
Right.
And we realized it's not. So we just left everything the way it was.
Wow, that's crazy. Just proves
Zach
that
I can't even talk.
No, it just proves to me that like there's so many elements that people may or may not understand that goes into making a movie, specifically the music and how important that music is. And one little thing can just change the dynamic of the music, you know, and or the tone of the song. Like maybe he said, "Well, I want the tempo lower here or higher here." Right. Next thing you know, it totally changes it from this memorable piece to a throwaway.
Yeah.
You know, and it, obviously it worked and it's memorable to this day. There's a fan of ours named Jack Burke, and one of the questions he asked is, do you think you'll do more live events in the future? And I wanted to come back to your time in Spain recently where can you talk to us about what you did in Spain with the score to Rocky?
Absolutely. And this is another instance where, you know, somebody contacts me about this music that I did over three decades ago and says, you know, we want to put you in a big program with for a film music, a world-renowned film music festival, film music festival. And he said, we just love your Rocky IV score, and we want that to be like the focus of this big concert, hour and a half concert with orchestra and rock band, and we want you to headline. I said, well, what do you mean headline? He said, the concert is going to end with you. It's going to be an 18-minute medley of Rocky IV.
At 4 a.m. like, at Spain it goes, man.
And this was the producer of the event, and he... He's just such a fan that he said, I've been looking for an opportunity to get this in the film festival for years. And now he says, I kind of stepped it up.
Love
and
it.
I want you to come over and we'll take care of you. And I want you to stay for a couple of weeks because we want you to do something to open the festival. And then we want you to do some, what do they call it? Master classes, where I would talk to students about composition process and how I've gone about it.
Oh,
man.
Oh, wow. What a
treat.
Because
it's, musicians, music over there is treated with such respect, and the kids are started at an earlier age. So they really have this love and passion for music, and they're great musicians at an early age, you know. So to talk to them was a real treat. Even I didn't speak the language, I had to have an interpreter, but.
Does Peter speak?
No, not one word. and luckily Peter was with me. I don't know how I could have survived without. He was my handler, my manager, my handler, he took care of all the merchandise. Well, not all of it that time.
And I was horribly sick.
Yes,
he
was.
But what a treat that must have been. Well, also for you. I mean, look. I am a musician, not a professional musician, but I've taught School of Rock classes, and I've been in a band, and Dustin and I, like I said, we're putting this thing together, we're going to make this happen, you know, play these songs that we love so much from the 80s. Being on stage, performing your music, and the journey that you took us down and how it got to be the way it is, That's so, like, I get chills just thinking about it. That's so cool.
Well, I had played my music live on previous occasions, but usually it was for Transformers conventions.
I was going to say,
I had to play, you know, Transformers music. I didn't really get a chance to play some of my other stuff. And this was, let me backtrack. I got an opportunity in 2018, was the Whiskey-A-Go-Go, world famous club in L.A. And my daughter, Danielle, actually is the one that...
Is that where Joe is playing?
That Joe's playing at the Whiskey.
Joe is playing,
playing the Whiskey?
Yes. Yeah.
That's excellent. I will definitely be contacted.
Yeah, I played the Whiskey as well back in the day, and it's so much fun. But
well, I had never even been in the club. And I've been out here for all these decades and never was in the Whiskey.
Oh, wow.
So amazing.
My daughter, Danielle, bless her heart, said... Dad, you should play the Whiskey. Let me get in touch with them and let's set something up.
Yeah.
She took the initiative, and she's not even in the music business. You know, she loves my music. She loves her dad's fact that he's in the music business.
That's so cool.
And she got this ball rolling, and sure enough, we got to put on a show at the Whiskey, and I did two sets. Got an amazing band together. Now, this was my first opportunity outside of Transformers conventions. This was the general public. And I wasn't sure how it was going to be received, especially at a famous club like the Whiskey. I knew I had a following, and I knew I had people that liked my music, but this was going to be a test, you know. And I still have a rock band that I've been trying to get off the ground now for probably about 7 years. Other things keep getting in the way. It's called Saga Star. It's a four-piece rock band, progressive rock band.
Cool.
So the first set that night was the sort of the debut of Saga Star.
Nice.
Okay. The second set was me doing Transformers music, Rocky IV music, Staying Alive, some video game music that I wrote with my partner, Kenny Meredith.
Yes.
Cool.
And so this was the first time I was presenting this music outside of a Transformers convention. Okay.
Wow.
And the crowd really, they were excellent. They were very, very receptive. Enthusiastic. Even some people at the Whiskey that worked there said, you know, this was one of the best musical nights we've had in a long time. And for them to say that, you know,
I love it.
That was a big,
yeah,
was
really
a big compliment.
Well, I mean, and I want to talk, I know we've been eating up a lot of your time, and I just want to talk a little bit about Transformers as well. But your music to me, and Dustin, I would think we agree, it's, and I've said it
don't
before.
Don't speak for me. How many times have I told you?
Don't make me put you in a chair.
Don't make me far from over you in the face.
Your music is timeless.
No,
it really, and I've said it before, it is. Like if it resonates with someone that is in their 80s, down to 5 or whatever, who cares? Like that is powerful.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And there's something about the image with the music that just, I don't know, for me personally, really, it's like that dream you have and you wake up and you like you remember everything, the smell, the visuals, the sound, and you're like, it's all part of that same, like that's to me, your music, that's how it feels to me.
Thank you.
You know?
Thank
and
you.
It is not just working out, it's also in the car and I'm driving home and it's just like something that makes me feel positive.
You're feeling down, you need a little pick-me-up, you put on a little Vince.
All right.
Gets you
I'm honored.
In the right mindset.
Thank you
perform with visuals when you do?
Absolutely.
Yeah, right? Because
I didn't at first. I didn't at first, but I played this function in 2000. I think this was the early 2018 called MAGFest. It stands for Music and Games Festival.
Okay.
And they asked me to perform live, and they asked me specifically not just to do video game music, but to do stuff from Rocky IV.
Uh-huh.
And I said, well, these people that are coming to this convention, they're not moviegoers. They're, you know, video game.
Yeah.
Oh, you don't understand.
Yeah.
You know, you're going to be surprised.
Yeah.
And I was.
Yeah.
Now, another part of the story, and I'm jumping around again.
It's okay.
I had had a heart attack two weeks before I was to do this concert.
Oh,
okay?
Man.
And my doctor said, I said, you know, should I even do this? Because I had, this was in the middle of preparing for this. And it wasn't that created the heart attack. It was a lot of other stuff.
Mm-hmm.
But certainly the stress of putting the show together didn't help, you know. So I was 2 weeks away from doing this job. I had a heart attack. And my wife said, well, you can't. Even think of going. This was back east to do this thing in Baltimore, Maryland. And I said, yeah, I know, that kind of takes care of that. And the doctor said, not necessarily. He said, and of course, my wife hated hearing this because she really wanted me, she really wanted me to stay.
You said the other thing.
No.
And I even had a friend, a very dear friend, who is has toured the world for like 30 years with a major rock group, telling me, don't, I've had this happen, Vince, to me, don't go and do this because you don't know.
Rest.
Yeah, just take it easy. Yeah. Doctor said, listen, if you're not, unless you're jumping around for an hour and a half on stage, you have my blessing to go and do this. I think it'll be good for you.
So conflicting. Now you're
You know, and my wife and I had many, many conversations, and I said, you know what? I'm going to do it. I just feel in my gut, and I want to do it.
Yeah.
So long story short, I get out on the stage. Now, I had no idea of the production they were going to put on because I had just gotten there to do a rehearsal the day of the concert with this band I had never met, okay? So I really didn't get a chance to see.
Wow, one day.
1 day. Wow. 4 hours rehearse, you know, this music. And at that point, it was 30 minutes of music. It wasn't a full concert, but still 30 minutes of Rocky IV, Transformer,
Yeah, with a band you've never played with.
So I'm backstage waiting, you know, it's behind a curtain, and when I go on stage, the reception, there was like 700 people there, which is a good number of people at a convention like this to come to one concert. And they were so receptive that I knew as soon as I walked on that stage that I was meant to do this job.
Yeah, you know? I love it.
And I told the crowd about this, how, you know, how good it was, how therapeutic this was.
Yeah.
And
yeah.
a lot of it due to their response to this music. Anyway, what I'm getting at is, I didn't know that they had prepared visuals behind me. They had a guy named Nate Horsfall, who I've since hired to do stuff for other concerts of mine. And it was really the first time I had visuals, and not just scenes from movies, but he had put together some really cool visuals not related to the movies for some of the video game stuff. And so that started off the blueprint for... So that was MAGFest in 2018, then did the Whiskey later in that year. And then last summer, we performed down in San Diego. That was also just like the Whiskey, except we added another song to the set list.
Was it Comic-Con weekend or
something? It was, okay. Absolutely.
Yeah. Yeah.
And a place called Brick by Brick, which was like 5 miles from the convention. So we had, you know, some of the people from the convention come over. In fact, Hasbro was there that night. Introducing their new Unicron toy. I don't know if you guys are.
Yeah, I have a buddy of mine who his thing is see it, want it, buy it when it comes to Transformer toys, and see it, want to buy it, Fernand, and when he bought the new Unicron.
That's what he sounds like, right?
Yeah, he did. Oh my gosh, it's so cool.
Well,
like,
yeah,
he goes to Comic-Con every year, and I've got a 5-year-old, so of course he's into Transformers too, and we've watched Transformers probably, I don't know, at least 10 times my son and I have. Wow. And he's at the age now where it doesn't scare him because some of the visuals can be really intense.
Absolutely.
And your score specifically can really draw out some emotions that can make the viewer scared, you know?
Yeah, Unicron.
I think that's a credit, obviously, to you because it's something like, you know, the Unicron comes on and there's that doom, doom, doom. Pulsing the beat, and Bodhi's like, I don't want to watch this right now. And now he's like, ooh, this is really good. Because now he's into Greek mythology and, like, you know, learning about how, and Greek mythology is really graphic, you know, Kronos eating his children and whatnot, and Medusa and all this stuff. So now that stuff doesn't faze him.
That's great.
So we watch your movie, and he's singing he's singing the melodies and the songs. And even though, you know, the touch is known as Stan Bush, you worked with Stan Bush creating that song, right?
No, it had nothing to do with the touch. I wrote a song called Dare.
Dare, that's what it is,
and,
Dare.
And
Dare.
Stan sang the song.
Yeah.
I wrote it with a friend of mine, Scott Shelley, who wrote the lyrics, and I wrote the music. And it was a really good fit. Stan did a phenomenal job of selling that song. You know, it was great.
But it's the music. Yeah, it's not just the awesome vocals, but it's everything involved in that song that really, you know, it just really makes you want to just get up and jump around. And
thank you.
Yeah!
the whole reason why we do this podcast is we're all about positivity. We're trying to create in this crazy world that we live in.
Absolutely.
You know, so take us into Dare a little bit. Like, were you, did you have visuals to go along with that storyboards?
No, boy, storyboards. That's a sore subject.
Oh, it's okay. Sorry.
No. It's again, it's one of these things that I've talked about a lot. And I remember I'm taken back to the feeling that I had when the producers of the movie approached me, and they approached me based on the music for Rocky IV. They really liked that music, and they thought that there was a connection. If you think about it, there is a connection in the good versus evil, and you know, the underdog coming up and winning, and, and
hero's journey. Yep.
And it was really nice that they saw that, because I didn't really see that connection. See, I came into this Transformers thing not knowing anything about the toys, you know.
Okay.
Not just the word Transformers was on the very outside of my, you know, awareness, and didn't know anything about it. And I said, well, it's based on this, you know, toy franchise, and we're making this first animated movie. There's been a TV series, which I didn't know anything about. And I said, I came into it very honestly. I said, guys, I said, I appreciate you coming to me, and I will absolutely do my best, but I'm not aware of this. You know, if you're looking for somebody that's like passionate about, I don't know anything about it. And they laughed.
You don't have to.
And they laughed. They said, that's fine with us. And I said, I'm not even going to listen to this stuff from the TV series. They said, no, please don't. You know, we want you to do your thing.
Right. Yeah.
So interestingly enough, on Rocky IV, I had 3 months to do 37 minutes of music. Transformers, I had 6 weeks to do 70 minutes of music.
Whoa.
Holy cow.
So when I met with the producers the first time, and we went through this whole thing about, you know, I'm not familiar with the franchise, blah, blah, blah. And they said, well, are you familiar with working with storyboards? And again, I could have said what first came to mind is I don't even know what storyboards are.
Right.
But I thought, oh, yeah. I said, yeah, absolutely. I've worked with storyboards before, you know. Typical. Yeah. You know, I had to actually audition to get the job. And the way they wanted me to audition was to write a piece of music that, you know, they gave me the synopsis of the script and showed me a couple of comic book pictures and things. Mm-hmm. And it's just write a song that has a good guy theme, bad guy, you know, a little bit of battle music, whatever. I wrote this piece, ended up being called Legacy. It's like 6 minutes long, and in fact, I performed. That was the piece that I added to the set in San Diego last year.
I love it.
And it's the hardest piece that we've done, and the audience loved it. And
so
a lot of fun to play. Anyway, I wrote this piece, and they loved it. And they said, "Okay, here's the storyboards. Now go write." And I'm looking at these storyboards, and I didn't connect. You know, I'd never had any experience with it. And, you know, the internet wasn't so readily available that I could get on and Google stuff and say, okay, what do I do with storyboards?
There was no internet.
Yeah, right?
It wasn't 1985, 86, right? Four.
Right.
Yeah.
Yep. So I didn't have really a way of researching it. And I did the best I could, you know, basically writing music to drawings with timings underneath each scene. Mm. And, looking back, I hope to never do that again. It was not only a challenge, but when I saw the music in the finished product, I didn't like. I would have gone back and written different music had I had picture to write to.
Sure,
But that doesn't seem to matter because the fans really, really like the score.
Look,
you know?
No one would know that. Sorry to interrupt. No one would know that your process, you know, you weren't comfortable with
the process. That's right.
It's like the music, yeah. Yeah. So
the music speaks for itself because people listen to it. We have the soundtrack going on 24/7 in our house. Yeah. Not joking. Wow. Dustin knows. He knows very well. Like, this is a constant theme in the soundtrack of our life, you know? And we were talking to another another guest on our show about how when you're doing some sort of physical activity, whether it's riding a bike or surfing, and you see it in a movie and they've got the music playing behind the character doing the montage in the Rocky movie. And it wasn't fun for me doing the montage on my own because I didn't have the soundtrack going on. If I wasn't wearing my headset and had that music going on, then it wasn't fun. The minute I put your music on specifically, I got this boost of energy.
Oh, that's great.
You know, I keep going back to it. It's such a pleasure to have you on our show. And you have piano solos. Mm-hmm. Right? I'm looking at the CDs right now.
Yes.
It's your latest work.
Yes.
Can you talk a little bit about that?
I can. It's actually a reworked record that was out in 1986 after I did Transformers. There was a gentleman named Roger Vidoris. He's since passed away. But he had this idea for a label called Artful Balance Records. And he said, Vince, I want you to be the first artist on this label. I want you to do a solo piano record. Because up to that point, I had done all this big production rock, you know, stuff.
Right.
Yeah. And he said, you know, I've heard you just sit down at a piano and play. And I think that we could do an album that would be successful. And we spent 2 days in the studio recording the music. And he came up with some artwork and they put it out. I don't know how well it sold. He said that the reviews were good around the world. It did okay. It did okay. And I was glad to have, it was like, it remains one of my favorite projects from a creative standpoint. So Peter, my manager, started this record label called Note for Note Music. And he said, Vince, I think we should redo the artwork. I think we should remaster. Mm-hmm. I think we should even add some music if you have any.
Yep.
And I was honored that Peter, again, he was one of these few people that said, I love hearing just solo piano music from you.
Yeah.
And, you know, the dramatic stuff that people aren't really familiar with. Yeah. And so I really credit Peter with getting this ball rolling.
That's really
getting
cool.
This off the ground. And I found a cassette of one extra piece that had not been on the original recording. Is that East Hampton Suite? Okay. American Hotel Suite. Okay. So you see the bonus tracks on the right. So Jessica was written for my daughter, Jessica, when she was a baby. And
I see Danielle on there, too.
Yes. Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's right. Both of my daughters are represented there. And I had this piece, this 9-minute suite, that for some reason didn't... It got erased on, like, the master tape.
Oh, no.
And the only copy I had was a cassette, an old TDK cassette.
Wow.
And Peter's husband, Edwin, took this into a studio, my partner's studio. Actually, he did some of the work at his own place.
Cool.
And made this thing sound like it was recorded professionally, digitally.
Amazing.
It even tuned it up because it was a little bit out of tune with the rest of the tracks. So the end result is it sounds like it fits right in.
Thank you.
And you can buy this CD on iTunes, right?
Yeah.
Everywhere.
CDs are sold.
Yeah.
Do you have any upcoming projects that you want to talk about? I mean, you just got off tour with Deep Purple. I know that.
Oh, I didn't know you knew that.
We do a little bit of research on it.
We know things.
That was a great experience. It wasn't actually Deep Purple. It was Glenn Hughes from Deep Purple.
Yeah, it's tricky, right?
But it was all Deep Purple music.
Yeah,
it was,
Deep Purple music.
Yeah.
It is interesting. There was a band called The Alarm from the 80s I love, and they kind of came out before around the same time U2 did, and I think they got overshadowed by that. The lead singer owns all the rights to the music, so when he performs as The Alarm with the music, but it's just the one guy.
Right.
And everybody else is, you know, a new young dude.
Yeah.
You know. But anyways.
Yeah, Glenn, one of the best rock vocalists in the world, bar none.
No
I
doubt.
Mean, really.
Deep Purple is a very, in my opinion, very underrated band in the lexicon of.
Absolutely. And that's another band that had a keyboard player that was very much into progressive rock music.
Totally.
John Lord was great. And
big shoes to fill.
Yeah, yeah. And Glenn was very happy with the way I filled those shoes, I think.
I bet.
And I, that's another story. I went 2 weeks to England with him, and I'm going to be going on a cruise in April for 8 days called On the Blue. And there's like 30 different bands. You have to look this up. Pretty amazing.
Okay.
David Pack, Poco, Firefall.
Oh my gosh.
All these bands are going to be on the bill.
Poco and Fire.
Yeah.
I might have to go on this.
And I mean, you'll be amazed at Dave Mason. I mean, there's
it's
ridiculous. It's ridiculous. Justin Hayward is the guy that's actually hosting it.
He's
hosting it. So it's called On the Blue.
Justin Hayward's
April
amazing.
1st.
Did you just whisper Justin Hayward's amazing?
Yeah.
He is amazing.
He is. Yeah.
I saw him live last year. It was phenomenal.
Yeah.
But so there's like 30 bands,
cool.
and Glenn's doing 2 1-hour sets on this cruise, and I'm going to be playing with him.
Well, what's the name of the cruise again?
On the Blue.
On the Blue.
Yeah.
I'm sure there's a website for it or something.
Ontheblue.com.
Okay. Because we'll do some promoting of that because that sounds phenomenal.
I'm really looking forward to
it. Where does the cruise go?
Goes out of Miami and it goes around the Caribbean islands. And
my gosh.
It's going to be really, really cool.
Spring break plans.
Yeah.
See? And I'd never been on a cruise before, so.
Well, that's a great place to go.
Yeah. And plus a rock cruise would be very cool.
Yeah, but it's like not it's I mean, I'm a fan of music in general, you know, and you go on a rock cruise and it's like you got Sammy Hagar and you got Rick Springfield and it's like this high powered, high energy, but then like Poco and Firefall.
Yeah.
People that don't know who these bands are should look them up.
I'm glad that you know who they are.
Oh, I do. They're on our
some of the best vocal bands ever.
Yep. No doubt. Yeah.
And
absolutely.
Orleans. Remember the band Orleans?
Yeah, still the one.
They're gonna be on this cruise.
Dance
as well.
With Me. Yeah. What? Really?
Yeah. No.
Oh my gosh.
It's a big deal.
Justin Hayward. Didn't Justin Hayward do the War of the Worlds? No, he didn't do that War of the Worlds musical.
Oh,
somebody but he was attached with that, I think, at some point.
Yeah, that would make sense.
Anyways, Justin Hayward's a legend, too. We're talking about legendary bands.
Yeah, I can't wait.
You included.
I can't wait.
Well, Vince,
and that
DeCola,
brings us full circle.
Yeah.
We
want to thank you for being on our show.
Thank you
this
for
has
having
been,
me.
Thank you for your time.
Absolutely.
We
probably went too long, but, you know, I love talking about this stuff. I really do.
You kidding me? This is
better. I don't think I said anything for like 2 hours. I think I just sat there listening to your stories.
You had some great comments.
No, I think I just listened. Was I here? Am I alive? What day is it? Hey, On the Blue. Let's go get the tickets.
OnTheBlue.com.
Yeah, no. I think it's either On the Blue or OnTheBlueCruise.com. Yeah.
Okay, and then check out Get Piano Solos.
Yes.
I mean, iTunes, Spotify. You can get the physical CD.
Yes.
And then you can put it on a cassette tape, put it in your walk-in.
That's right.
And, you know, from Rocky IV, Staying Alive. I mean, everything. Just look up Vince DiCola and get his music because it's really great. Oh, and thank you again for sharing
so
many stories.
My pleasure.
And thank you,
guys.
Peter.
Thank you, Vinny.
Thanks,
and
guys.
Hopefully we'll see you down the road. Maybe we'll play some music together at some point.
That would be cool. Yeah. So do you both sing? Is that the deal?
Yeah. I mean, I sing.
I play some of the keys and some
do you?
Some guitar, and I'm so unpracticed that I'm probably terrible. Like, if you handed me an instrument right now, I'd be like, what does this do?
But it's all about the fun, like you said.
It's all about the fun.
Yeah.
Looking forward to hearing more about that.
Oh, yeah. That's down the road for sure.
And great.
Thanks again.
My pleasure, guys.
Cool.
Thank you.
Thank you.
All right. Thanks so much for listening. We really appreciate it.
Don't forget to subscribe and give us a four... Is it five-star rating? Don't forget to subscribe and give us a five-star rating on iTunes. We'd really... Don't forget to subscribe and leave us a five-star rating on iTunes. If you listen to us on Spotify, that's great too. And you can find us on the internet. Don't forget to check out our website at $2LateFee.com and follow us on Instagram and Facebook at $2 Late Fee Podcast. We'll see you next time.
We did it.
You're listening to the Geekscape Network.